Vicki is number five. Market stabilization report.
Chris actually going to present first on the reserves, and then I'll follow up with my embassy.
So, before we begin, may I introduce our 2014 bocce ball champion for Sackers?
Okay.
The team was called Hot Coco, and it was Vicki, Karen, Gabe, and that guy over there with Jerry.
Fast Jerry.
And they won how many? Four games in a row, I think, and took the championship.
Nice.
And we've never played before. Gabe made the winning point. It was a fun night.
Yeah. So won ribbons worth 73 cents.
Yeah. And the prestige, though, of being able to call yourself the champion.
Of course, priceless, but...
I like that hot cocoa.
Jerry, is that going on your Form 700?
That was Karen's idea.
Unless I put another $49 in something.
Okay. So, as you recall, every 6 months, the accounting manager, Vicki, reports to the board on the status of the market stabilization account and the contra tracking account. And each time, it's kind of getting lost in the history of what these things are and why we're calculating it. So I prepared this presentation to give you a little bit of overview. So these two things, the market stabilization account and the contra tracking account, are two little pieces in the application of our interest crediting and excess earnings policy. So I wanted to run through that policy so you can see what it is that we're calculating, so you have some context for the report. Now, I wanted to just briefly talk about this idea of excess earnings is something that's in the 37 Act. So all 37 Act systems have some of this in common, although it's very different from what a different, it's not general to retirement systems overall. So we have these reserves. We have the employer advance reserve. That's where we collect and accumulate employer contributions. And we have member reserves. That's where we collect and accumulate member contributions. They're broken into basic and COLA. So each active and deferred member has their own account balance. The sum of all those account balances is the member reserve. We have retiree reserves, from where we pay benefits to retirees. Now, the idea here is that these contributions that are coming in are calculated based on a certain assumption of what interest is going to be. And those contributions and the interest are going to pay those benefits. So if you have interest beyond what's assumed, they can be used for some other benefit or some other purpose. And that's where we get to next. So these things make up the valuation value of assets. But beyond that, if you have excess earnings, they get into these reserves that are above the valuation value. There's a statutory contingency reserve. It's just excess earnings that are held over. There's a board contingency designation. Like I said, this is all 37 Act systems. Beyond that, you could have a benefit that was granted with excess earnings, and those benefits would be paid out of, there'd be a different reserve set up to pay those additional benefits, whatever they might be. Sometimes. Not every benefit that's granted through excess earnings sets up a non-valuation reserve. And any earnings that don't fall into any of those buckets are left over for future years. That's called the unrestricted designation.
Could you define that unrestricted designation for me a little clearer?
Sure. So when you have the excess earnings, which we'll see, they first fill up this contingency reserve.
Yeah.
Then they fill up this one.
Yeah.
Then you can use them for some discretionary purpose. And if you don't use them, they fall in there.
When they fall in there, what does that mean?
Okay, well...
You're going to do that later?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Okay, so all of these make up our actuarial value of assets. And beyond the actuarial value, we have the total deferred return. This results from our five-year smoothing. These are gains and losses that haven't been recognized. It could be a negative number. Right here it's shown as a positive number, and currently it is a positive number.
That's because we're doing it this year.
Right. It hasn't been positive for quite a while. So all these make up your market value of assets. Okay, so let's, so we got evaluation value, actuarial value, and market value. Market value could be above or below the actuarial value. Okay, so let's look at our system in particular, our interest crediting policy. Now this is where the systems vary, but they all have your valuation reserves, non-valuation reserves, and then this unrecognized portion. So what we do, every June 30 and December 31, we credit interest to reserves. That's in the statute. So we first calculate our investment earnings on a market value basis, what we've actually earned in that semi-annual period, and we split that into our expected return and a gain or loss for the period. The gain or loss for the period, we run it up through our smoothing process. And this is what Vicki's going to talk about when she talks about the market stabilization account. It doesn't all get recognized. It's going to get smoothed. And the market stabilization account calculates two things. It calculates the gain or loss that we are going to recognize and what remains as deferred, what sits up there. When it's a positive number, it's basically another reserve against future contingencies. So this is your question, Jerry. So then we take what was ever left over in the unrestricted designation from the prior period, and we set that over here. We take the whole board contingency designation, set that over here, and I will mention that in our policy, so that the statutory contingency reserve is always 1%. That's for everybody. The board contingency, ours by policy, is set at another 1% of assets. Total assets. And we take the statutory contingency reserve. So these five pieces, we add them all up, and that makes up what we call available earnings. And this is all, if you read through your interest crediting policy, which is included in the packet, step by step, it follows these exact steps. You calculate available earnings. So the next part of our interest crediting is the actual interest crediting part. We interest credit to the reserves, all the valuation reserves, and this post-retirement death benefit reserve. Currently, we only have one non-valuation reserve. It was set up through by a transfer from excess earnings to pay a supplemental burial allowance of $5,000 to retirees when they die, to their beneficiaries. So those benefits get paid out of that reserve. So we credit all these reserves with interest at the full actuarial rate. So this is important. In our policy, the interest we credit does not equal the available earnings. So it's either going to be either credit more interest than available earnings or less. So in the case where we credit more, what happens, what we're doing here is we're crediting unearned interest to our reserves, and we say we have a shortfall. And in order to keep track of that, we charge the shortfall to the contra tracking account. That's what that is. So the contra tracking account is a negative number. It offsets all this unearned interest. So when we add them all up, our valuation reserves is the same as if we had not credited that unearned interest. They just cancel out. So it doesn't affect, the fact that we're crediting this extra interest doesn't affect contribution rates.
What interest rate are we using?
For this period, we're using 3.875, which is one half of the 7.75, actually.
7.5.
It'll be changing 7.5. July 1.
Still 0.7.
Yeah. July 1.
Doesn't come into
right.
Just like the contribution rates that depend on that rate change July 1.
Yeah.
What happens next? I forgot. Okay, so then you have the case where the available earnings are more than the interest you credit. That's when you move on to the policy where you talk about excess earnings. So in that case, we've already credited all this interest. We still have available earnings. We could call them excess earnings for now. And you follow this process step by step to see what our policy says we're going to do with these excess earnings. So the first thing we have to do is credit the contra tracking account. It is only if we've totally credited the contra tracking account back to zero that we would know we have no more unearned interest and these excess earnings really are excess of what we assumed. It's only then that any remaining excess earnings would then go to, first of all, restore the statutory contingency reserve with 1% of total assets. If there were still excess earnings, you restore the board contingency reserve with 1% of total assets. Then you could use it for some discretionary purpose. And we actually, the policy goes on to spell out what we would do, in order. The first thing we would do, it says, is maintain this dollar power benefit. That's something that's granted to retirees with a very large COLA bank. To buy down their COLA bank, we grant them a COLA, transfer this money back to the retiree reserves, and reduce their bank. And there's a list of other things that you can see what we would do, either do or consider doing. And anything that we didn't use just gets held over as unrestricted designation. When the cycle repeats, it goes into available earnings. Okay? No questions, then we can see what we actually, the numbers for this period, what actually happened.
Kurt, for the next 6 months, do we go to 1/2 of 7.25?
Not this 6 months.
Not this one.
July.
Next one.
July.
Next one. So what, December 31st, we would be doing it. And that's not really spelled out in the policy exactly. It just says we use the full actuarial rate. So that's just been our practice.
Okay.
Go ahead, Karen. This is a very off. What program are you using? That's not PowerPoint, is it?
Yeah, it is.
That is?
Yes.
Really? Cool.
You must have taken a class
using all the bells and whistles.
I guess, or they've updated it since the last time I used it.
Took a little time, yeah.
But you haven't brought in any noises.
So I thought about it.
No,
I thought
about it.
Good job.
So can you just spend a little bit more time on the post-retirement death benefit reserve? So we currently, in our calculations, we see there is a reserve there.
Yeah, it's about $15 million right now.
Yeah. And what is that? Is it being used now?
Yes.
Okay. Everybody gets $5,000?
So any retiree, any CESARA retiree, no matter which employer, no matter when they entered CESARA or anything, well, if they're receiving a benefit and they die, they get $5,000. The standard death benefit is $1,000 in the CERL. But we used excess earnings to make it $5,000. And that gets paid out of that reserve. So this interest, so right now, so the excess earnings transfer was made more than 10 years ago.
It was funded.
There was a couple transfers. The only thing that happens now is we credit it with interest and we pay out the benefit.
Okay, and I assume you do calculations to make sure that there is still enough, after interest is credited, there's still enough money in that account to actually pay that benefit going forward?
No. No, we don't. The reason that's in a non-valuation reserve is we don't assume we're going to pay it forever.
So when
we only pay
out,
it exactly
as long as we've got the money.
So when you do the valuation, you'll see that they ignore that $15 million in the valuation and they ignore that benefit.
So quickly, how 15 million divided by 5,000, how many people?
Well, we're crediting it with interest, so the interest is more than.
So even though.
I mean, it's been going up the last few years, it's still increasing.
So even though when it's gone, it's gone, there's still the base 15 million in there, is what I'm hearing you say.
No.
Yeah, but it's being
there was 10 years ago, there was only about 10 million, and it's been going up with interest faster than it's going down with benefits being paid.
Okay, well, that's good.
But it's slowing down a little bit as we get more retirees.
But the baby boomers are now coming in, and you know, 10 years from now, it'll probably start to be cutting back. But I think it'll cover itself.
So it's 3,000 people if you just did the pure
okay, that
15 million. But
well,
then
that's
you've
not
got
very many.
You've got 7.25 being added to it every year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's enough interest for something like 200 people to be paid each year.
Each year. Harvey, you had a question?
Yeah, Kurt, if we assume, the board assumes the rate of return on an annual basis, 12-month basis, let's say 7.75.
Right.
What we're using in the example. We're supposed to credit interest to the reserves on a 6-month basis.
Right.
If we credit, in this case, 3.875 twice in that year,
yeah,
it's compounded.
Yeah, it's about 7.9.
We actually more than 3.5.
That's right.
More than 7.75 for the year in order to be able to do that crediting.
Right.
So aren't we, if we're going to credit 3.875 twice a year, isn't our assumed rate of return 7.86 or something like
right.
that?
Yes, you could argue that. Some systems do it that way. Systems do it either way. But
it's not so much an argument, it's a fact. I mean, we have to make that bogey with us so that we don't go into
well, and also, the bogey that we're trying to make this year is not 7.75, it's 7.25.
Well, do it on
7.25. So then why did we wait 18 months? I mean, it's yes, I agree. I would prefer to do it that way. Mm-hmm. We have talked about this with the actuary. We said, look, you told us you're assuming the assumed rate is 7.25, and we're supposed to credit semiannually at the assumed rate, so tell us what it is semiannually, and they told us, they gave us a number, the number that you're talking about.
So shouldn't we use that lower number on our semiannual crediting then?
Oh, yeah.
So that I compounding the totals what the board thinks it's assuming?
I think a case could be made for that, yes.
And so that's
what
in our...
What do the actuaries say?
The actuaries are fine either way because they have clients that do it both ways.
And so is that simply a matter of changing our funding policy?
It's not actually in the policy.
Excess earnings credit?
I don't think it's spelled out in the policy. I think we could make that change without a change in policy. It's a change in our long-standing practice. We could bring it back to the board for discussion if you like. I don't know. What would you recommend, Harvey?
I want to make sure we're...
I just want the board to know what it's doing. It's
yes,
assuming
that's
7.75 or 7.25, and it's actually crediting interest.
That's higher.
And creating negative reserves and at a loss at the end of the year.
Right.
Without knowing that it's doing that. I just want you all to know.
But isn't that... Okay, so I heard you say from July 1 to December 31 of 2014, when you do this report in the next 6 months, won't you only be crediting half of 7.25%?
Right, but are we going to take 7.25 and divide by 2, or are we going to add 1 and take the square root?
When you credit it twice, what you're doing is you're compounding that rate.
Exactly.
Okay, so you're really crediting a higher rate.
Hurt on the amount actually being paid out, the increase would show up on member reserves, where member reserve becomes the net amount being paid out. That's the only place we pay more.
Well, the post-retirement death benefit reserve also.
That's still $5,000, isn't it?
Right, but it's only going to pay as long as the money lasts, and if we credit more interest, it's going to last longer.
Okay, you're right.
Those two places. There's actually another slide if you want to talk about how these things actually work in practice. But yes, there are two places where the interest we credit, whether it's earned or unearned, actually affects the benefits we're paying. And those two places are when a member terminates and elects a refund, which most members don't. But if they elect a refund, they're getting all the interest we've credited to them, whether we've earned it or not. And like I said, the post-retirement death benefit reserve. Since we are going to pay out all that money someday, we're going to pay out all the interest we credit as well, regardless of whether we've earned it or not.
But the policy states once we get enough reserve, we put money first into that debt benefit.
It's not first, but...
No, after the contingencies, then we go to the debt benefit.
No, I think you go to this one. You go to the dollar power cola and the $200 cola.
Right. No,
But regardless, with the way this is set up now, with the size of your contra tracking account, I mean, you're not expected to restore it to have excess earnings. Anything else on this slide?
Like Pandora's box, Kurt, when you open it, right?
Yes.
Well, you said this board made a policy to make that 5,000. Did I hear you say that by law you have to do at least 1,000?
No, actually the Board of Supervisors also granted the 5,000. This board transferred excess earnings to fund it.
Okay, but once it's gone, is there still a responsibility for the 1,000 or that?
Yeah, there's still 1,000.
So, okay. I, All right. I just learn something all the time about what happens when you die.
You'll let us know later, won't you? Yeah.
Okay, well, everybody has to know.
Not sure I want to pursue that, so.
Okay. Can we move on? Okay, ready for the actual numbers from this particular period?
And I'm sorry, I don't have a fancy PowerPoint to present.
Numbers are numbers.
So let me just mention, Kurt, this is so helpful to start this particular topic with that explanation. Good job.
Yes, agreed.
And it doesn't hurt to do it again.
Weekly.
Well, no, every time we do the report.
That's true.
With Sam. Very helpful. Okay, so we're reporting on our market stabilization account as of December 31st, 2013. And last time I reported on the MSA, there was a suggestion to include a memo. And as you can see, we do have a memo in addition to a few exhibits. I've also attached the previous MSA report for 6/30/2013. Hopefully this approach provides a better understanding of our market stabilization account process. Take a look at Exhibit 1. This is kind of replacing our old report here. I'm sorry I didn't put colors on it, but we'll have it that way next time. If you take a look at Exhibit 1, the spreadsheet format has changed from the previous period to include additional items such as the total actual market return, expected market return, the investment gain and loss for the six-month period. You'll also see the deferred return, which was reported on the previous spreadsheet. That's the far column on the right-hand side, as well as the deferred return recognized to future periods. You'll see those numbers on the bottom half of the report. We did report them out previously by year, and now we're providing it to you on a semi-annual basis. And you'll see for December 2013, all these numbers are positive. So it's a good sign. The format approach is more consistent with how Siegel Consulting reports our MSA in our annual VAL report. For the six-month period ending December 31st, 2013, you'll see that we had an investment gain of $331 million. So that's that very last column, the from and to six-month period. If you go over to the investment gain, you'll see $361 million. We're only recognizing, however, a gain of $107 million, as noted in the memo, and this represents 10% of our total five-year gain loss. As Kurt mentioned in our reserves, our MSA is the deferred return developed by the smoothing of realized and unrealized gains and losses on a five-year smoothing. So what we're doing is we're smoothing amounts that are above our actuarial assumed rate of 3.875, and we earned a little over 10%, 10.01. So we're smoothing the difference between those percentage for this six-month period. Had we just met only our actuarial assumed rate of 3.875, if you see that last column, the six-month period, the July through December, had we just met it, that item, deferred return on the very right-hand side, would be zero instead of $325 million. If you look from June of 2013, our previous MSA report, to the current report, you'll see that our MSA has improved from $282 million to $536 million, and that's that number in bold on Exhibit 1. The second exhibit shows the application, kind of what Kurt just went through, of our interest crediting and excess earnings. It breaks out how we determine our available earnings, our interest crediting to our reserves, as well as the tracking account balance. So the expected earnings of $228 million, that first line item, and the recognized investment gain of $107, those numbers are actually calculated on the first exhibit. As a result of having excess earnings of $33.5 million after crediting our interest to our reserves, we're actually able to reduce our CTA balance by that amount. And I think last time we were up here, we were estimating about $15 to $20 million. So we actually lowballed it, but we were able to show excess earning of almost $34 million. So our CTA balance went from $1,845 million to $1,812 million. Our contingency balances still remain at zero, as Kurt had mentioned, because we have a negative amount in our contra tracking account. And like Kurt had mentioned, our CTA represents the interest credited to the reserves that have not been paid for out of current or excess earnings. The third exhibit.
Just a quick question.
Uh-huh.
So the earnings were a little over 10% last year, and with all the smoothing and everything else.
For this six-month period.
For this 10%. Six-month period.
Uh-huh.
All we paid the contra down was $33 million.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What that just did to my head was, how long is it going to take to pay the contra down, making 10%? I mean, I just went like, oh, come on. And
right. Actually, won't pay it down, making 10%. Making 10% wouldn't pay it down, because you're only making 10% on your assets. But you're crediting the assumed rate on the reserves. So you need above 10% to start whittling away. Mm-hmm.
And that's because of the unfunded portion. We don't have the assets.
Ways away, Jerry.
You don't have the assets.
I want a shotgun. I want to shoot somebody.
The liability keeps going up.
So, yeah. So this is a good example of how your unfunded liability affects you, even though we sometimes hear from an actuary who says, don't worry about it. If your assets are not there to earn, then this is where there's an effect.
Mm-hmm. Sure, there's an effect, and that's why when you have this loss, you increase your contribution rate. You know that your gains are not going to make up this loss. Your contributions are.
So that's basically all I have on this.
Where's the good news?
A quick question on the dollar power. Those are pre-1983 retirees.
Right.
So that amount being paid out should be going down, I would think, pretty drastically now, because they're getting to the point, you're talking 30 years.
Yep.
I mean, the life expectancy, looking at it, when we get rid of everybody in that, does that just go to zero, or do we look at pre-funding or doing it to moving
zero.
That year up?
It'll go to zero before we stop paying it out.
Good word.
Because when we transferred money for these benefits, the dollar power COLA and the $200 power COLA, we were assuming 8% returns or something.
Uh-huh.
But then we changed our assumption and we've been crediting with less. Once you do it longer.
Right.
So, but by putting them, by fully funding them and putting this money into valuation reserves, now when there's a gain or a loss or assumption change, it changes the contribution requirement. So contributions come in to pay that.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me, but when I first came on this board, Bobby Ray and Rich Cabral both indicated to me that the $200 a month that goes to pre-83 back people was pre-funded with the $125 million, but $25 million was set aside to cover those people, and the interest that it made would almost cover the monthly payment.
Right.
And now you're telling me that...
Well, we changed the interest rate.
Mm. Change the interest rate.
It's been going down.
It was 8.25% when you made that last
when that was
$23
made?
Million transfer.
Okay.
And then you said, okay, as long as it keeps earning 8.25%,
it'll do it.
It'll do it, and then you lowered the interest rate.
Lowered it to 7.75%, and now 7.25%.
Well, how many people do we have? Do you
yeah,
know
that, I mean, there's
because
not
it
that.
Should be dropping, I would think.
280?
Still living and still receiving the extra $200 a month.
Yep.
And how much is in that fund, roughly, now, offhand?
I don't know. 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 I don't know offhand, but it doesn't matter. Because,
like, you're saying it's still going to
be down. When you lower the interest rate and you change your liabilities, you change your contributions, but we don't calculate, here's our contribution rate to pay this benefit, that benefit, this guy, right, that guy. You just increase the employer's.
Right.
Later on, I want to get together with probably you to see what the dollar figures are that's left in that fund.
So we, yeah,
and how many people are actually left? I want to look at that.
This one is 10 or 8 million or something.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know the exact amount.
It goes down about. It's been going down about $2 million a year. We still pay about 2.7 million. I think we paid 2.7 million in benefits towards this one last year. This one we don't actually track separately. We'd have to, I mean, we know every payment we make, we can figure it out.
And we're using a current now mortality table. I assume that has a higher expectation of longevity than the one used started, when that was originally put aside. But you still go through evaluation based on those alive and receiving the benefits.
Right. Those benefits are just included with all the other benefits we're paying retirees when we do the evaluation. And the liability and the assets are included in the assets, and liabilities are included in the liabilities, and there is not a separate valuation for each benefit.
Okay. Ever had a question?
I'm sorry.
I'd like to make a motion to change the method used for crediting the interest so that the annualized rate does not exceed our assumed rate of return under our actuarial assumptions.
Second?
Procedural matter that's not on the agenda for today, so I suggest putting that on a future agenda. Take action on it, and the public will be aware that issue is up for discussion and possible decision.
Well, I thought our interest crediting and excess earnings policy is
part of the agenda package.
It just says presentation. It doesn't say action.
Agenda doesn't give the public any indication that the board is going to be considering that change.
So can I move that it be put on a future agenda within the next 3 months?
So what are you proposing? How are you changing it?
So currently what's happening is we are actually crediting.
No, I understand what's in the method. Good, but what are you proposing to change?
I am proposing that we change that method so that we are not ever exceeding our assumed rate of return. Right now we are.
So there's a couple of methods we could do for that, right? We could take the square root of our assumed rate of return and compound it semi-annually. We could also compound annually, right?
There are two different ways,
annually.
Right.
Yeah. No. So before we just say we're just going to do this.
So wait, hold on. So
the law requires us to credit interest twice a year.
There you go.
There's only one way to do it, and that's change the rate.
But can we have the actuary give us something on it, too? Oh, this is happening. Let's do this. I would like to hear from the actuary to see what Siegel has to say about it.
Yeah, I agree. Completely.
Okay, so do we need a motion
to... We need a motion to agendize?
No, I think it's a direction to staff.
Okay.
And perhaps on future agendas, when we are doing presentation regarding market stabilization, do we want to have, like it says in number 6, consider and take possible action regarding... It's just something for staff to consider with our new CEO.
The only thing I would say no is because, like you said, we want to get further information, so I'd rather bring
it up. Right, but that could be... I don't disagree with you, but I'm just saying sometimes agendas, the way they're prepared, prevent this board from taking action when it might. So it's just a thought for our new CEO to look at, instead of just presentation... Because we don't have to take action. It just gives us the ability to take action.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And
just at the end.
I would still agree with you that I would want to have Siegel getting the actuarial information, but it's just how we go about doing our agenda. We always, at the Board of Supervisors, we always have action as in our agenda items, whether a presentation to accept. Presentation and accept report, you know, that gives us the ability to take action. So
may it require more information if you're going to take action? In other words, you prepare as if we're going to look at it, or you prepare as if we're going to take action. Well, that may increase the amount of information on the agenda for us to look at. And is that worth the trade-off on it?
Well, I'm not saying we have to take action.
No, but it's adding more work to the staff, because when we take action, we may require additional information than you would if you're just reviewing.
I don't have a problem with that.
I'm not asking. I'm asking about the staff's perspective.
No, I know. I know you are. Maybe that's something that we need to discuss with our new CEO, how they want to
do that. So just one other thing along that line. I just said come back, put this on the agenda in the next 3 months. However, in thinking that through, it would seem that we would want to address this in June before we cross over another half-year mark and make that change before we're...
But you don't credit it till the end of the year, right?
No, June 30th.
Well, they do the calculation, but it's going to be as of a certain date.
Presumably July 1, so you want to make that...
Well, your compounding won't happen until December.
Yeah, going retro is a lot more
your difficult compounding.
Than doing...
Well, this year may be an anomaly, and then we'll have to look at it in the future.
Yeah, but your compounding won't hit to the second crediting, which would be December. So theoretically, we got to December to get this done.
That's
well, if members are assuming that we will continue as we have done in the past, however, and then we in December say, no, from July 1, you earn less.
Well, as long as the member's making his contribution prior to that interest crediting. So if I'm going to buy back time from July 1st to December 31st, it's the same amount. But once the interest hits on December 31st, January 1st, it's the new with the interest included in it.
We need to hear from Siegel.
Can we hear from Siegel in June?
Right, I would agree June is a better date.
So is your motion to further discuss and take possible action at our June meeting?
That she can't make a motion.
I'm sorry. To have it placed on the agenda for discussion in the June meeting.
My request to staff is that we... I'm sorry, you're starting to say something.
I just said you should probably ask Kurt about timing with the actuaries and come back and present this.
It's just this compounding issue. I'm sure we can take care of it in June.
Yeah, it's not a big issue.
Kurt, would it affect if we go past June, the compounding? It shouldn't, because you're doing your first half, and your interest compounding happens the second.
We're supposed to credit the first half with what we assume for the first half.
Right.
And by Harvey's logic,
that's the
The second half is where the compounding hits, right?
But every...
And then every 6 months after that, yeah.
It's supposed to be evenly split.
Right.
So...
June, we need to do it in June.
So... Let's use big numbers. It's a little bit easier. Let's say we assumed 8%.
7.9.
If we did 4% on June 30th and 4% on December 31st, you would have actually come up with 8.16%, not 8%.
For the year.
So all you need to do is figure out what with compounding over the 12-month period is half of 7.75 or 7.25, whatever your assumed rate is. What with, I mean, this isn't hard. I mean, Kurt can do this in his sleep, right? Mm-hmm. Well, don't sleep. But I mean, this isn't rocket science. Just take half of whatever compounded over 12 months gives you your assumed rate of return. Credit half of that on June 30 and credit the other half on December 31st. We really don't need Siegel. It's just a calculus error. You just need to understand
it just needs to be on an agenda.
That you're not crediting, you're not actually crediting more and creating a deficit.
We have the actuary
shows up in all these accounts. So just divide it in half, whatever that compounded number is.
For clarification for my own, because sometimes I'm... if we do this, if this proceeds and we follow it, does this then mean that the employee and employer rate go down, that they pay less into it? What does it mean? Do they pay more?
I don't think that should matter. What it means is we do the calculation right.
No, it matters to me because... people are going to ask, what does it mean? And I need to be able to explain to them what it means. And they think in terms of, is it going to cost me more or is it going to cost me less? They don't think in terms of the total fund like we do.
So, Jerry, I did the math, and it comes out to 0.15% difference of effective interest annually. So, that, if my math's correct, and I'm just a new guy.
It lowers. Does it lower the
it would lower, rate that the yeah, employer it would lower and your the employee effective return as an employee if you get your money back?
Right.
If you get your money back.
It doesn't change your contribution rate.
Well, let's do what you said. Have Siegel come in and give us that.
So that's what I need to know those questions.
Yes.
Okay.
It only affects the benefits that are paid to people who refund their money.
True.
Such a small amount of the benefits that we pay. It's going to have a very small amount on the cost of the plan.
That may be changing.
It basically doesn't affect anybody's monthly benefit if they're retired.
No, it doesn't affect
No.
No, it doesn't. It just affects that, like you said.
It just affects actives. But how?
Only if they elect a refund and a termination.
Yeah, right.
And they refund their money.
If I can clarify, maybe for Jerry, every year we send out statements to our active members.
Yes.
Right? And you have in there your contributions and interest that you've earned. That's based on our current methodology. The proposed methodology will cause a slight decrease in the interest earned part of your benefit statement. Why that matters is that if somebody retires, it doesn't really matter. Your retirement isn't based on your contributions. But if somebody takes a refund, terminates and takes a refund, then that money is paid to them.
Mm-hmm.
Less.
So Louis' question is that going to affect buyback or not?
Buyback.
Or is it buyback six?
Purchase of services.
Yeah, prior government services. Does that have any impact on that?
Should. It may.
It could be less.
Curtis shaking his head.
It does. This change would only be going forward. But when you when you purchase, do some kind of service purchase, you have to pay what the contributions would have been with interest all the way until you're making the payment. Mm-hmm. That interest is this interest. So if we lower that, it's going to be cheaper for people to buy.
Cheaper
it.
But you thought it would be 0.15%.
0.15.
Just the way it is, have Siegel come and do it. Because it affects the net benefit too, or how much money you're putting into that, which is not much, but it does affect that.
Doesn't affect Kirk, do you have a clear comfort on what needs to be presented to the board and the re-agendizing?
Yes.
Good.
Okay.
Any other comments, questions?
This is an interesting crediting question as opposed to a published assumed rate of return question. Isn't that what we're saying? We're not talking about changing the assumed rate of return.
No.
Because, I just don't see that kind of precision when plans are asked what their assumed rate of return is. It's not 7.35.
Your actuary has made 10 basis point changes in their recommendations to this board over time. We went from 7.8 to 7.9 to 7.75.
Right.
That hasn't been insignificant.
Now, I understand there's no rule of thumb, but typically you see published figures that are 25 basis point adjustments. It's just convention, not the law.
Right.
Okay. I got one more. Are you done? Or
I'm done.
I got one more thing. page, it's not even listed. Your...
The old one?
Yeah.
6:30?
Yeah, June 30th. When we get all those black numbers up there, if we ever do... And after the light bulb that went off in my head with what we did with the what little excess we I thought was a lot turns out to be a little going to the Contra. How many years do you perceive it'll be before Contra is ever gone?
You know, I tried asking Kurt that, and he didn't come back.
And he wouldn't answer you either, huh?
After our time.
Based on everything that we do, the premise that we have is that our assumed rate of return is what we assume, and any future gains are going to be offset by future losses. And if that's true, then the blue line is going to grow by 7.25% a year, and the green line is going to grow by 7.25% a year, and they're not going to get closer.
So the short answer is not any time soon.
Can we get rid of the contra? Can we just wipe it off the chin?
Wouldn't that be nice? I would love
that. Is the contra an accounting tool? I'm sorry. I'm just really not clear on what it is. And if we can do this offline, if Karen needs a tutorial, because I'm listening and I'm still not clear on what that is. And especially if Kurt is saying that they're going to go like this. To answer Jerry's question, it's never going to go away.
To me, it's double entry accounting.
Well, yeah, that's what I got earlier.
Concept, yeah.
It's all
yeah.
It's an accounting tool.
It's an accounting tool. A contra just means an offset.
Is right.
So a contra is the negative of the unearned interest. They just cancel. It's just to keep track of the unearned interest.
So it isn't, we're not trying to get rid of it. It's just an. It's just there.
Well, in order to build up our reserves, our excess reserves, we need to get rid of it.
Accumulated losses.
I see.
Let me say one thing. Okay. What happened before we came up with the contra is we would just credit available earnings up to the assumed rate. Above the assumed rate, we go to excess earnings. Okay. Mm-hmm. But what would happen when you increase the equity exposure? You know, this only happened. It hasn't been that long. It was only 1984. Prop 21, yeah. You had all this equity that worked great in the 80s and 90s.
I was a lot younger.
And then the dot-com bust happened. And that's why contras came in 2003, because you were smoothing in the losses from the dot-com. If you didn't have that, but you did have the volatility, you would have years where you have not enough available earnings, so you don't credit it. Contribution rate goes up, because you have a loss. And then the next year, you have gains, and you can quickly replenish your 1% contingency reserve. These things are not designed for equities. These are for bonds. So you quickly replenish that, and then you spend it off on more benefits. So you get this ratcheting effect. But you have a bad year, contribution rates go up. You have a good year, you increase benefits. Bad, and you have this ratcheting effect where you build it up. The contra tracking account is designed to prevent that. Where if you have a bad year, you remember you had a bad year. And if you have a good year, it first asks
so
you.
So with smoothing.
Make up for the bad year.
Yeah.
But since you've lost the money, it makes it really hard to make up.
Yeah, and years ago we used to fund retiree medical.
Yep.
We used to get a bill from the county, and then whenever we had excess earnings, we paid that bill for retiree medical for the county.
Okay. So, correct me if I'm wrong, but did we not determine that the IRS doesn't allow that? Fund other things now under our determination?
Yes. But sir, it doesn't allow you to use pension assets to fund non-pension benefits.
Might be explicit then.
I assume you could have a VEBA as it contrasted to a qualified plan balance.
That's not the way our plans are set up. If I may, it might help to answer Karen. Somebody over here, maybe it was Scott, said it exactly right, Karen, on the contra account. To go back to your first accounting course, double entry bookkeeping, the law says that we must credit our assumed rate of return to these reserve accounts every year. So let's just use 8. Okay, we assume 8. We have to, on our books, credit 8% interest to our reserve accounts. So if we made 7%, not 8%, how do we comply with the law? How do we credit 8%? Well, if you're going to credit 8,
and you only made
a 1% deficit. If you've only got 7 in your pocket, you've got to have if that's a credit, you have to have a debit account somewhere on your books. And we put the 1% in the debit. So that if you add them up,
got the 8.
Credit at 8, you have a debit for 1, that was the 7% you earned for the year. The contra account is the debit.
Okay, thank you. That's very helpful.
That's very helpful. That's all it is.
Plus interest.
It's because we had to credit interest that we didn't have fully.
And we didn't earn.
We have a credit account and a debit account. That's the whole story.
Some systems let that contingency reserve go negative. That's another way to do the same thing.
Okay. Do you need a motion? You do need one. accepting the report?
Presentation.
There's no action.
Presentation.
There's no action on this.
Oh, I thought we'd have.
It's just a presentation.
Thank you for the memo and thank you for the PowerPoint.
Thank you.
Really helpful.
This is probably a good time to take at least 5 minutes.